Chapter 14. It's the first week of December, 4 weeks since the accident. I'm not back home. I haven't returned to work. I missed the most important part of recruiting season at Berkeley and Thanksgiving. Well, Bob and my mother brought the kids and an entire Thanksgiving feast here to Baldwin, and we all ate dinner in the cafeteria, so technically, I didn't miss Thanksgiving. The home-cooked meal was delicious, certainly far more delicious than the grayish-looking turkey, mashed potatoes, and gravy I saw on the plastic trays in front of some of the other patients. And we were all together, but it didn't feel like Thanksgiving. It felt sad and weird. I'm sitting in a room they call the gym. I chuckle a little to myself every time I come in here, thinking, look at what it takes to get me into a gym. But it's not a gym in the traditional sense, not like the one I never go to in Wellmont. There are no treadmills, free weights, or elliptical machines. There is one Nautilus-like machine, taller than Bob, with pulleys and a harness hanging from what looks like the machine's giant, extended steel arm. I want no part of whatever goes on in that thing. In addition to this medieval contraption, there are two long tables pushed against one of the walls. A tidy stack of paper and pencil tests rests on one, and a wild assortment of Rubik's Cube-type puzzles and games are piled on the other. There are some Reebok steps and blue physio balls, which I guess can probably be found in a real gym, a set of parallel bars for practice with assisted walking, and a big mirror on one of the walls. And that's about it. There's a poster on the wall above the puzzles table that I've become fascinated with. It's a black-and-white photograph of a fist positioned below the word attitude, written in bold red letters. The message and the image don't seem quite right for each other, but the more I visit the poster and turn it over in my mind, the more the combination inspires me. The fist is power, strength, determination, fight, and attitude, a positive attitude. I will bring a positive attitude to my fight to get my life back. I clench my hand in solidarity with the fist in the picture. I am strong. I am a fighter. I can do this. I'm sitting directly in front of the wall with the big mirror. I spend a lot of time in front of this mirror, searching for the left side of me. I do manage to find pieces of me every now and then. My left eye for a second, the laces of my left sneaker, my left hand. It's a lengthy and grueling effort for such a temporary and tiny reward. I have found that my left hand is easier to locate than any other left part of me because I can look for my diamond ring. I used to think of my ring as a beautiful symbol of my commitment to Bob. Now it is a beautiful 2-carat flashy target. I told Bob that my recovery would probably benefit from more jewelry, a diamond tennis bracelet for my left wrist, a cluster of diamonds dangling from my left ear, a diamond anklet, a diamond toe ring. Bob laughed. I was only half kidding. Martha's late, and my mother's using the restroom, and there really isn't anything left to look at in here but me in the mirror, so I go ahead and check myself out. I'm not a pretty sight. It's always hot in this room, so I'm not wearing my fleece hat. My hair has started to grow back, but just enough to stick straight out in every direction. I look like a chia pet. I'm wearing no makeup. Yet. That's part of what I'll probably do in here today. Martha will ask me to put on my makeup, and I will. And then my mother, who is usually hovering in the background, will either giggle or gasp depending on how the day is going. And Martha will tell me that I didn't apply anything on the left. The left half of my lips will have no lipstick, my left eye will have no mascara or liner or shadow, and my left cheek will have no blush. And then I'll study my face in the mirror and really try to see what they see. And I'll see myself in full makeup, looking pretty good, minus the chia pet hairdo. It's a spooky and sometimes embarrassing moment, becoming aware of what they see, comparing it to what I see, and what I don't. I'm missing a whole continent of experience, and I'm not even aware of it. I'm not aware that I'm not noticing the left half of my face, the left half of Martha, the left half of that page of Junie B. Jones. To me, nothing is missing. The first step in my recovery is to become aware of my unawareness, to constantly and repeatedly remind myself that my brain thinks it's paying attention to all of everything, but in fact, it's only paying attention to the right half of everything and nothing on the left. Every second of the day, it seems, I forget that this is so. While the part of my brain normally responsible for this awareness has taken a leave of absence, I have to recruit another part of my brain to be my own babysitter, to monitor my every move, and to chime in whenever I need prompting. Hey there, Sarah. You think you're seeing your whole face, but you're actually only paying attention to the right side. There's another half there. It's called the left. Honest to God. Hey, Sarah, that page you're looking at, you're only reading the words on the right half of the page, and sometimes only the right half of the words. Really, there's a left half. That's why it doesn't make any sense to you. Trust me. But so far, my inner babysitter has been less than reliable, not even showing up for the job most of the time. She's a flaky teenager obsessed with her boyfriend. I may have to fire her and start over with someone new. The second step, once I become aware of my unawareness, is to expand this knowledge over to the left, to stretch my focus and imagination past what seems like the edge of the earth and find the other half. What used to be automatic and entirely behind the scenes, seeing the world as whole and seamless, is now a painstaking and deliberate process of trying to reel a disconnected left into consciousness. Look left, scan left, go left. It sounds simple enough, but how do I look, scan, or go to a place that doesn't exist to my mind? Bob keeps insisting that I can do anything I put my mind to, but he's referring to my old mind. My new mind is broken and doesn't give a whack about the left or my old mind's reputation for success. Attitude, fist, fight. I can do this. The strangest thing about sitting in front of this big mirror every day is seeing myself sitting in a wheelchair, handicapped. I don't feel handicapped, and yet, there I am. But I'm not actually paralyzed, thank God. My left leg can move. The muscles, tendons, ligaments, and nerves in my leg are all connected, poised and ready, waiting for confident instruction, like one of Charlie's wee avatars waiting for him to press the A button. Come on, Sarah, press the A button.